Right now, it is time for Appraise This with Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack. You can find them on the web at tqag.com or on a Tuesday morning right here on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, Tim and Greg.
Good morning.
It's just you?
Huh.
No, Greg. No, Greg?
No, he's at his desk.
He's crying. Let's see. Once again, let's see. There, it's Greg. Are you there now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was in, then I was out, then I was back in.
That's the story of life.
Isn't that the truth?
In and out and back again. Frank Sinatra sang a song about it, I do believe. Well, anyway, I want to start off with a Halloween auction that's coming up. And I don't know if you guys know about it or not. It's going to feature the Larson Art Auction, an Andy Warhol print called from the series Death and Disaster. Now, you hear the name Warhol, Andy Warhol, and you automatically think of big bucks, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know what's going to come out of this Halloween auction. I have no idea. It's going to be held, actually, it started on October 23rd and still continues right now. One print is called A Little Electric Chair.
We've seen that series, actually not the whole series but some of them. Interestingly enough, the one that I think we saw was the one that was the electric chair. It's a little bizarre, but
well, it's
old Sparky.
It has to be bizarre if it's Andy Warhol. But you know what? He's bizarre in a mainstream kind of way. Does that sound weird? But he really is. He's not.
No.
He was very bizarre at first, but now he's almost like mainstream.
I think he is considered mainstream as a pop artist. I mean, he's frankly, for me personally, I think he's probably the king of pop art. I think he really redefined what pop art was. I think he was probably the main creator of what we know as pop art today. I mean, I've never read anything about him, a biography or anything, but it seems as though when he whatever was going on in his head, he was able to put, you know, he was able to make real for people. And I don't know if he did it as a shock, for shock value. I don't know whether, you know, it's just because he's done so many different things and everything has always been interesting. It's been compelling. And it has stood the test of time, so I don't know what more an artist could wish for.
Yeah, well, this piece that you're talking about is from his Death and Disaster series, as you said, and then it's the Little Electric Chair, and it is it's done in like this cherry red that was added to this photo, so lending to this already ominous blood tone. So. It's they have it up for auction. It's a silkscreen. It's estimated at 2.5 to 4.5.
Well, I just think that when you have an artist and has a personality that Andy Warhol carried along, it also helps when you have that personality that comes across and matches what you do actually as a painter. And a lot of painters have the personality, of course, match their paintings, but when they can take that personality itself and focus it out, it brings their, I think, their pieces of work to a whole new level. Kind of like you can have baseball players that are great baseball players, but certain baseball players, because of their personality and because of their style, just leap to the head of the pack.
Right. Babe Ruth. Number one example.
Yeah.
Of course.
Now,
big cachet, big names.
That's right. Now, yeah, it's funny. I was watching, I forget, it was years ago, about an article, a documentary on Steve Wynn and how he created what he created and how he had a disease where he was losing his eyesight. But once again, there was a special that event by Sotheby's in Las Vegas, and his collection fetched over $109 million.
Yeah. And, you know, so, and in that documentary, did you see where he put his elbow through of his paintings?
That stayed with me forever. And you know why? Jill's dad, James Goodman, who passed away over a year ago, James Goodman Galleries, in his home, the first time I went to his apartment, which was in New York City, and he had so many pieces of art in his house that were world famous pieces of art. I didn't know where to sit because I had remembered watching that documentary. Right. And I said to myself, I ended up sitting in a room, the dining area, which didn't have anything that was worth millions of dollars, because I saw that and it was amazing to me, and it just affected me whenever I used to go to that apartment.
Yeah. Now, but this particular sale did really well. They did a pop-up. So Sotheby's took over one of the spaces at the Wynn Hotel to have the pieces there. And, yeah, I mean, the sale did really well at $109 million. Now, well, and it exceeded the $100 million pre-sale estimates.
Now, when he did that to his own painting, did he get it repaired? And it probably affected the value of the painting?
Oh, sure. You know, there was a restoration. There was also insurance. I'm sure there was a lot behind the scenes also that went back and forth. But it also, because it was in the news and it was also added to the provenance and background of the piece, you make sure that it's restored. Luckily, it wasn't in an area that was like in the major focal point of the work. But yeah. You know, they to get it. I'm not sure that if it was resold or if I were him, I'd hold on to that. It's just one of those okay, oops, kind of moments. And,
it could be kind of like the Banksy piece. You know, it was
kind of
damaged, and it came back to sell for.
I was going to say, I agree with you. I thought to myself. When the Banksy piece tried to self-destruct, and all of a sudden the Banksy piece, which was famous, became more famous, that maybe because it was Steve Wynn, because he poked a hole in it, it would be more famous after that. But right. I don't think you can compare the two, though.
Well,
no. No.
So let's go from the sublime to my ridiculous, and that is there's an auction coming up. There's a first penny black stamp. They expect that it's going to get 6 million pounds, and they call it, Sotheby's calls a stamp the most important piece of philatelic history to exist. It's only it's 1 square inch in size. Square inch in size. It's a one penny stamp, 6 million pounds, which is what, about $10 million U.S. dollars.
Something like that, yeah.
Once again, amazing. Amazing.
It's one of those things that this is another illustration of, if you're not familiar with the particular asset class and what makes it rare, what makes it desirable. I think that, you know, the internet and sensationalism, the word rare has really, you just use that in how you're ordering your steak anymore, not in classifications of items in a marketplace like this, because I think that you need to say one of only two known in existence, or the only one known in existence, to provide the context of why this is so important and why it's so desirable. Because there's obviously a whole level of individuals who would be willing to put that kind of money up for something like that. And the image, you know, it's an image of Queen Victoria that is on this, it's basically, there's no color, it's black and white. And so it's not like it's this, you know, incredibly floral or colorful piece, but it is an important piece of in the history of stamp and stamp collecting.
I'd like to know how many are still remaining, because it was it has a kind of a cool history, but I don't know how many are still in existence. I don't know. I read the article, but it doesn't say in there. It says how many were originally sold, but produced. It doesn't say how many exist today. So I know it's an extremely rare piece, and I don't. It doesn't come up. I don't think it's come up very often. If it has, I don't even know if it's in my lifetime that it's ever come up for sale, but I'm sure that collectors between themselves have, you know, back and forth. But it'll be interesting to see what it actually, how it actually goes. I'm not sure if the sale, when is the sale? I think it's coming up.
They say, I think it's coming up in December. I think that's what the article said. I don't have it in front of me now.
Yeah, I don't have the article in front of me either. I just remember that it's something that's coming up for sale, and I get the notices from.
Yeah, it says in December. It'll be sold in December.
Is it December?
But it doesn't give a date. It just says December. So that's coming up. So I'm sure they're promoting this. And there'll probably be more information. When things like this, you know, these things like stamps, coins, when you see these rare coins or stamps that sell for millions of dollars, that's when you start going back and say, wait, let me look in the cabinet. Let me see if I have one of these. But it's because it's hard to believe that there's so many, and it's something that we've used or seen. And, you know, I mean, not this rare piece, but when you try to translate it, it's when it is something that's rare or something that is one of just a few known examples, that does make a big difference in the marketplace. And especially when you have a lot of collectors that are looking to add something of this magnitude to their collection.
You know, you guys, I don't know which one of you did it, but you sent along a link to me for the Bonham Auto Auction.
That was me.
Now, what I appreciated about this auction is in this auction, yes, there were the mega prices. There were but they also sold some very interesting automobiles that are collective that people can, I'm going to say this, it's going to sound rude, but normal people could have bid on. They had a 1966 Sunbeam Tiger, small little convertible, which I'm familiar with because I had friends that actually owned one. That sold for $42,000. And you know what? $42,000 at a collector sale like that is a steal. You got an amazing car that will increase in value, and you spent $40,000+.
Can I ask you a question? Yeah. When I sent it to you and you looked at looked at the prices, were you a little shocked that they were so, for lack of a better word, air quotes, normal?
and I said to myself, this isn't the normal type of thing that you see. But there were also some that weren't normal, that were sky high. But my favorite, and I've always been a person that likes smart style, modern style. And you see some of these cars from the early 70s and 80s. And once again, an 86 Ferrari 2+2 coupe, a 412, $39,000.
I know.
You know, it's,
and then it went all the way up to the Aston Martin that sold for $500,000 from 1966. I think that might have probably been the one that brought the most, but there were, I counted, I think there were a total of 9 or 10 Aston Martins in this sale, and I don't think I've ever seen that many Aston Martins. This sale kind of reminded me of leftovers.
you're right, because I love American cars from the 50s, okay? Because my dad was wealthy at the time, okay? And he purchased these cars. And at the sale, there was a 1957 Cadillac Eldorado Biarritz convertible. And that car sold for $100,000. But at the same time, a 1964 Chrysler Imperial Limousine. With coach now, the,
oh my God, yes!
And the coachwork was by Ghia, and Ghia, if you think about the Carmen Ghia in Volkswagen, Ghia was the designer of that car. This 64 Chrysler Imperial sold for, once again, $39,200.
I think it would be interesting to find out what the provenance of that was, because as soon as I saw that, the first thing I thought about was, I thought about Dallas and the limousine, you know, Kennedy, because they used to drive around in these when I was a kid. This is what their limousines were. And it looks like a presidential limousine to me. So it'd be interesting to find out. You know, $39,000 there again, that's a steal for something like this, I think.
Now, you know, what's also interesting in this auction is that included in it was a car from 2020. And it was a Lincoln Continental, and Lincoln now has gone back, and they make a few of these a year. If you remember Continentals from the 60s, they had the swinging doors, the suicide doors.
Yeah.
Well, Lincoln came out, and I think they make about 1,000 of these a year. You have to pre-order and special order. Well, they came out with a coach edition. Now, this is, okay, a 2020, and we're in 2021 right now. This sold for $78,000. You know what? You can buy that car brand new. I think it's for around $90,000, $95,000. But once again, what was interesting to me is that it was peppered in with all these other classics, a car from 2020.
Yeah, it does seem a little odd. I mean, people are thinking of auction as, you know, for classic cars. Well, you know, 2020 is not really what I would consider a classic car. But somebody thought, oh, let's just slip this in there and see if somebody bites.
Now, this is a general question I'm going to ask you, Tim and Greg. Did they expand this auction to make it a little wider and more open so it could be made more money? Because I've never seen a list of cars like this at a classic car auction.
Well, see, that's why I thought it was kind of a leftover sale. Like, these are the cars that were either didn't sell, they passed, or they didn't sell in previous auctions. I don't know that for a fact, but you know, I follow them because, I get these notifications, and you know, when you go back and look at their other results, this looks like a scratch and dent sale compared to the other stuff. So I don't know I don't really know what the answer to that is, but you know, even so, to me, it's not chump change. But
no, but
to some of these people who are major car collectors, you know, like Jay Leno, I mean, he must have. I'd be curious to find out if he bought anything at this sale, because it was like a major scratch and dent sale to me. But it was fun to look to see these, and I was curious for the especially the Aston Martins. Some of the cars that I haven't seen, like, for example, the Cadillac Eldorado. There were a couple in there. Did you see the red one? I forget that was really a great looking car. But my question is, I just would like to know when they do these, how much of them are in original condition, because I think we talked about this in the past. A colleague of ours who we use if we have to do muscle car appraisals, we usually contact him. And he has a whole kit. They measure the, you know, like the thickness of the paint. They measure whether it's original metal or whether
it's been patched up.
Right. So I'd be curious to find out for $500,000 for this Aston Martin, how much of that is original and how much of it's been restored. So that's something that I have always had a question about. So I think it would be fun. I've never been to one of these auctions. I think it would really be fun to go see one. This stuck out to me as being kind of a one-off just because of the air quotes low prices.
Well, but also a number of auctions you have to remember is that not every auction is a blockbuster. Yeah. Is that they do, there are certain times of the year that they put the higher end and rare, I hate using that word, but the more desirable and unique items that go in. But then there are auctions that are more for everyday collectors and people that can jump in. So that's a typical practice within the auction industry.
All right. Now, we can't leave without this story because we've talked about it so much. The pair of trainers worn by Michael. Now, these are trainers, regular sneakers. Not regular, but they're sneakers. But worn by Michael Jordan. Sold for $1.47 million. A pair of sneakers.
Yeah. See, people just can't get enough of these shoes. I remember, when was this? It was a year and a half ago we started talking about this, and it's amazing how this market, it's just on fire.
And he wore those in a game, so that did not, this now comes in as the highest ever paid for a game-worn footwear from any sport, $1.47 million. I wonder, you compare for a pair of sneakers, and then you look at these cars that went for $30,000 and $40,000 and $50,000. It's the same universe but a different planet.
Well, the fun fact about those shoes were his rookie season, I guess. So that could also be one of the, it's kind of like your rookie card, I would imagine. But sooner or later, Michael Jordan has to run out of shoes, you would think.
Well, I don't know about that.
It seems like they're always
about that.
You know, he could pull out a pair of sneakers where he sank a last second 60-foot shot to win a championship, and the same thing will happen with those.
Yeah,
he's got that star power. And the provenance, as Tim always talks about, I think whatever goes up from him will always get $1 million now.
Well, and a lot, even his rookie card. I mean, and you know that there are a lot of things that are still out there, but there's still a lot of collectors who just want some of that star power, as you said, Marshall. Is that there's just he was an amazing player. And people want to collect that and have that part of their collection.
Well,
you know what's really fun about that shoe is if you go to NPR, I got also NPR, I get notices from, and they sent a thing about the sale of the shoe for like 1.47. And there's actually a photograph of him in the air with that pair of shoes on. Which would really be fun to have if you bought the shoes, is to somehow get a hold of that photograph. But the question I have is, how often did he wear those if they were his rookie season? Because, I understand that each player, they don't just have one pair of shoes. I think it's like they change them depending on – they rotate them, I suppose.
But, they have multiple pairs, Greg. Now, see, Greg won't let me have more than one pair of sneakers. He's like, you have plenty. You have plenty. And I'm like, I need a couple extra pairs of shoes. Oh, no. No. What do you think you are? Michael Jordan?
Yeah. He's my El DeMarcos.
No. Not that bad.
Not
at least, two pair. Come on.
Well, it's the amazing world of auction continues, and we always love speaking to you guys. Have a good week. We'll check with you next week.
That sounds okay, good. Well, next you take care, buddy. And happy belated birthday.
I'll keep an eye out for any more good, fun cars and send them to you.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay, bye.
Tim Leek and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This here on Robin Hood Radio.